Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, global tribe of disruptors. We are here to disrupt. It's Coach Nick and the dudes of disruption, disrupting your automatics. Today's show, Foodruption, protecting our planet. We are live every Sunday from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern. You're catching us live here on WHCR, WHCR.org. 90.3 FM. We are the voice of Harlem. And you can also catch me live on my Facebook page, Nick Papadopoulos. Again, you're listening to Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption. Happy Sunday. Happy start to the new week. I am Coach Nick, author, speaker, and facilitator around transformational and leadership topics and a committed disruptor. We're here to awaken humanity. So everyone, and I mean everyone, gets to leave their mark. That's what's wanted and needed today, for everyone to leave their mark. I deliver transformation and disruption in the areas of leadership development, corporate culture and engagement, team dynamics, and personal development. Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption have a men's group here in New York City. We have a couple of sessions this month. Come as a guest. Send your men. If you're a man, come. If you have men in your life, send them. Email me at coachnick@coachnick.com and join our men's group as a guest and check us out. We are transforming how men are showing up in the world. And Coach Nick also has, along with some friends, a political social action group so that you can get on the court and stay engaged around politics. We have a meeting this month, May 23rd, here in the city. Please email me again at coachnick@coachnick.com to get the details of our politically social action group and the things that we're doing there. Again, today's show is Foodruption, Protecting Our Planet. Today's show disrupts the myths around being a vegan or vegetarian, having a vegan and vegetarian lifestyle, and exploring the environmental implications that factory and animal farming causes in the world. During our time today, we'll learn the cost to the environment, to ourselves, and to the animals themselves for the lifestyle and food choices many of us make and ways to disrupt the automatic. We have four segments. We start every segment with opening thoughts and Nick's riff. The second segment is Say What? The third segment, we have an Ask a Dudette, and my girlfriend, Anissa Romero, artist, singer, extraordinaire, will be calling in. And segment four, we have our parting shots. In a moment, let's bring him on now. We have a special guest that's going to be joining in via the phone. His name is Demosthenes Maratos. I know him as Demo because I've known Demo Maratos since I was 5 years old. And Demo, hey, Demo.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, man? Welcome to the Dudes of Disruption and Coach Nick Show.
I appreciate being here. I'm sorry I can't join you in the studio, but I'm glad and grateful that we could connect remotely by phone. So
absolutely,
glad to join you.
Absolutely, yes. And one of our childhood friends is watching and listening right now. He just did your name in caps with three exclamation points. Demo, yes, is in the house. Demo, for those who are new to meeting him, he was featured in the 2014 documentary film Cowspiracy, the Sustainability Secret. Demo serves as the communication director at the Sustainability Institute at Molloy College here in New York and Long Island. He is the Sustainability Institute lead organizer of the annual New York Vegan Living Program. He also hosts the Sustainability Institute's Sustainable Living Film Series. I guess you would say, Demo, you're pretty serious about the vegan and vegetarian lifestyle. Is that fair to say?
Very fair to say.
Okay, great.
I've been vegan since 1989, and I think it's one of the best decisions I've ever made. And this is one of the things I like most to advocate veganism. So thanks again for having me.
Awesome. Well, we're talking today about Foodruption, protecting our planet, and we're going to be, as I said, dispelling some myths around veganism, vegetarianism, and the implications of having that lifestyle, making those choices, not as a make wrong, but rather what are the costs to the environment? What are the costs to ourselves? So your phone calls at 212-650-6903, and we start every show with Nick's riff.
I know that, dude.
Wanna rip? Tribevolution. Well, you know.
All right. We start Nick's Riff, segment one, with a quote to help set a context for our show. And this quote is from Mahatma Gandhi. The greatness of a nation can be judged by the way its animals are treated. The greatness of a nation, any nation, of a people, can be judged by the way that nation, its people, treats animals. That is Gandhi, and I think, Demo, you'd agree that that's a good way to help set a context for today's conversation.
Absolutely.
So before I bring you in, into the conversation, I want to just share a quick story that a mentor of mine in a workshop once shared with me. It's called The 100th Monkey by Ken Kays Jr. And I'm going to take an excerpt out of that book before I bring you on, Demo. And so it's a story about some scientists who in the 1950s were studying some monkeys on an island off of Japan. And what they did was they were providing these monkeys with sweet potatoes, and these sweet potatoes dropped in the sand, if you will, in the dirt, right? The monkey liked the taste of these sweet potatoes, but they found that the dirt was unpleasant. And so what they realized was that one of these monkeys, what she realized to solve this problem with the dirt on the sweet potatoes was to start washing the potatoes in a nearby stream, right? And this monkey taught her mother and taught some of her playmates as well. And so what they started to learn was, we got the sweet potato, it tastes good, we don't like the dirt, let's wash it, right? And so what happened over time is more and more monkeys were actually replicating her behavior, where they were cleaning the sweet potato so that it would actually taste better. And what started to happen over a period of 6 years, what the scientists found was, as I said, more and more monkeys started to do the same thing, that, you know, the adults started to imitate. What they found was that the adults started to imitate the children, and more monkeys were taking on this behavior. And then something took place about 6 years after this behavior started, from 6 years earlier, that all of a sudden, and they believe it was around the 100th monkey, which is why this is called the 100th monkey, what they realized was that when the 100th monkey on one of the islands learned to wash that potato, that all the monkeys on that island now started to wash the potato. And more importantly, what they found was that on other islands where they had no communication, they had zero communication, what they found on the other islands was that the monkeys were actually doing the same thing. So the story of the 100th monkey by Ken Kays Jr., and again, my mentor Robin Lynn once shared, once the 100th monkey was reached, almost everyone in the tribe was washing these sweet potatoes, right? And what they observed was that this critical number, once you reach a certain critical number, once you reach a certain level of consciousness and awareness, right, it can be communicated from mind to mind, right? In this case, it was from island to island. And so the 100th monkey phenomenon means that when only a limited number of people know of a new way, it may remain the conscious property of those people. But there is a point at which if only one more person, in this case one more monkey, but in life it's the same thing with humans, if only one more person tunes in to a new awareness, a field is then strengthened so that this awareness is picked up by almost everyone. There's a book out there called The Tipping Point. It's very similar to The Tipping Point. At some point, a certain level of consciousness is reached. The reason why I'm sharing this story to help set a context for our conversation today is because I think it's time. I think it's time that we reach a different level of consciousness and awareness around the choices we make around food, around the lifestyle that we have around food, because there are big implications to the environment, to ourselves, and to the animals themselves by some of the choices that we make, including yours truly. And so today's conversation is not about making anybody wrong for choices that they've made up until now or today, rather to disrupt the automatic that it has to be just one way as it relates to how we eat, how we treat and interact with animals, how we treat and interact with the environment, with our world. So, Demo, let me bring you into this conversation. You said that you became a vegan in 1989. Why did you become a vegan in 1989? That's a long time ago, which means if I know you that long, that means the two of us have been around for a long time.
It means we're old.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, to be honest with you, honestly, punk rock changed my life. It got me thinking about the world beyond myself. And when I began to ask questions about and question our use of animals in society, I found uncomfortable answers. And, I believe, like most of us, and most of your audience probably believes, that animals shouldn't be harmed unnecessarily.
Right.
But my actions contradicted that belief, and I continued to eat them, wear them, use them in different ways.
Right.
The only way to resolve that contradiction was to become vegan.
Got it.
That was in 1989.
Got it.
And, it's something that... at this point, when you consider the environmental implications of our food choices and the sheer number of animals that are exploited for unnecessarily for food, it's really a moral imperative at this point.
Got it.
And so that's what brings me to this point. I mean, looking back on it now, I think to myself, don't let anybody tell you that veganism is extreme, because it isn't. We should be vegan for the same reasons that we don't treat other humans as objects.
Right.
And it's simply a matter of aligning our actions with our ethics. Ethics, again, that most of us already claim to hold. So it's not changing you in any way.
Right.
It's simply encouraging you to live out your values. Most people believe that that animals shouldn't be harmed unnecessarily. Most people believe that the environment is worth protecting. Most people believe that their health is important to them.
Right.
Veganism offers a solution to all of those issues and more.
So it sounds like a slam dunk, right, Demo? You're saying that veganism can allow you or give you access to a healthier life. It protects the environment, our planet, right? Mother Earth, if you will. It protects animals, for that matter. So there's lots of myths. There's lots of myths about being a vegan, and I'm going to use vegan and vegetarian, throughout the show.
Okay.
And feel free to obviously make the distinction for us. But there's a myth lots of myths around being a vegan or being vegetarian. I want to ask you a couple of them before we complete segment one. And then obviously we'll continue into segment two. And segment two, we'll really start to jump into the impact of some of the choices we make and its impact on the environment. So one of the myths that folks always say is, where do you get your protein? I mean, everyone tells you, you get your protein from eating meat. So I'm going to ask you that. It's a simple question, but I know that's always one that folks who are making a choice around food and around their lifestyle around food, where do I get my protein from?
Yeah, well, it's a good question, and it's always one that makes me chuckle a little bit. And I think anybody who, if you have any vegans in your audience who are listening today, I think they'd agree with me that it's sort of funny how everyone becomes sort of a nutritionist when they encounter a vegan.
Right.
The simple answer to the question is, where do you get your protein? The answer is plants. Broccoli, spinach, leafy greens, tofu, quinoa, nuts, grains, seeds, etc.
Right.
What's important to know is to point out is that we really don't need as much protein as everyone believes. The World Health Organization recommends that men and women obtain about 5% of their calories from protein. So
okay.
This would mean about 38 grams of protein for a man who's consuming like 3,000 calories a day, and 29 grams of protein for a woman who's using about 2,300 calories a day.
Right.
This amount of protein is impossible to avoid when your daily calorie needs are met with unrefined starches and vegetables. For example, like rice alone would provide 71 grams of usable protein. White potatoes can provide 64 grams of protein.
Okay.
And, so it's virtually impossible not to get enough protein unless you're not eating enough calories or only eating highly processed food. So it's certainly a myth that vegans can't get enough protein.
Got it. Let me ask this question and then we'll take a break. And this is a big one. I was having this discussion this morning over breakfast with a few people. Can the world sustain all people being vegan and or even vegetarian for that matter? right? Some places in the world, the folks that I was talking to this morning said to me, some places in the world don't have drinking water, let alone fruits and plants and vegetables like you're describing, or the resources, right? I mean, there are some places in Africa, for example. There's places all around the world, right, that don't have the resources, have limited resources. If we were to have every single human be vegan and vegetarian, would we actually have a different kind of epidemic, a different kind of crisis? What do you say about that?
The answer is no. I don't think we would. I mean, clearly, you know, if we were to see a vegan world, it would be an incremental process. It would
right.
happen slowly. But the important thing to point out is, you know, just because it might be difficult at this point in time for other parts of the world to maintain, you know, who are concerned with fresh drinking water and so on, doesn't mean that in the developing world we can't make these choices. And understand
right.
that the choices that we make in the developing world affect the rest of the planet in developing
yes.
countries and so on. Like, I'll give you an example. You know, like, it should be noted that the majority of the bulk of the corn, soy, and grain grown in the world is fed to farmed animals.
Right.
While 800 million people on the planet are currently suffering from hunger and malnutrition. That includes 50 million people right here in the United States who are food insecure. But think about that. 800 million people on the planet are literally starving to death right now.
That's huge.
And, you know, a few years ago, John Ziegler, who was the UN Special Envoy on Food at the time, called that the diversion of wheat and corn to biofuels a human rights crime.
Right.
That's because in 2007, 100 million metric tons of corn and wheat were grown and diverted to biofuels to power our cars and trucks.
Right.
But I would argue that an even greater human rights crime is that same year, 2007, 756 million tons of corn and wheat were fed to farmed animals that were in turn fed to people. That's an even greater human rights crime, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And a lot of the corn and soy and grain grown in the world is coming from these developing countries to feed animals in wealthier nations like the United States and throughout Europe for, you know, people like us, you know, who are over-consuming.
Right.
And at the expense of feeding these grains directly to people. So I think, again, veganism offers us a solution here.
I agree, and I love that you said that industrialized, developed countries like ourselves, obviously, can take the lead because how we operate, because we obviously use a great deal of fuel and energy and resources maintaining these factory farms, right? Obviously, that actually impacts the entire world. We're going to take a break, Demo. When we come back, we're going to start to jump into a little bit more around the impact on the environment itself, which you've started to give us a hint. The question for our audience is, what myths do you have about being a vegan and or even being a vegetarian? More when we come back. Your phone calls at 212-650-6903. All right, you're listening to Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatics, disrupting your automatic way of doing, behaving, thinking. Special guest Demo Maratos, Anissa Romero will be calling in the third segment. Today we're talking about food eruption, protecting our planet. We have a shout out here from Corey Comfort. Corey, thanks so much for joining the disruption. He says, Demo, it takes a huge amount of water to produce meat, which is absolutely true. That song, Demo, I'm sure you're familiar with. That's the Smiths, Meat is Murder. Morrissey, who's the lead singer of the Smiths, has been a strict vegetarian since his teens and he's never been shy about expressing his beliefs concerning animal rights. That song is the title track of the Smiths' second album, which is encouraging fans to abstain from eating meat. Morrissey once wrote in his autobiography, "The aspirant moment is the little track. Each musical notation and image, the subject dropped into the pop arena for the first time, and I relish to the point of tears this chance to give voice to the millions of beings that are being butchered every single day." Pretty intense, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
So, Demo, you were featured on the documentary, the groundbreaking documentary Cowspiracy. Is that correct?
I was happy to be associated with the message of that film. Yeah.
What was your experience? I'm going to play a clip in a moment. What was your experience of that whole process?
The experience was terrific. I met one of the filmmakers here in New York City at the plant-based food conference in 2012.
Right.
Or 13. And we got to talking about the film he was making. I got to telling him about the fact that I'm an educator in college and have a background in environmental advocacy. And he was interested in what I was doing. I was absolutely interested in the film, the subject matter of the film, because I think it's a subject that hasn't been touched.
Right.
I mean, I've worked in the field of environmental and public advocacy for 25 years, and I can tell you quite honestly that too many people in the green and environmental movements are perfectly fine with killing animals. So, you know, bringing this issue to the fore was important, and I'm proud to be associated with the message of the film. It was released in 2014. It's streaming on Netflix worldwide right now, so
right.
Millions and millions of people have the potential to see it. So
yes.
It's a great film that gets people thinking in the right direction.
Awesome. I'm so proud of you, for someone who's known you for all my life, so proud that you are engaged, involved in a documentary such as the one you just described, Cowspiracy. We're going to play a quick clip. So we're in segment two. Segment two is what we call the Say What segment, when we play an audio clip or we share an article that's related to our topic. I found this clip. It was a compilation. It's a short audio clip. It's a compilation from some pieces from Cowspiracy. Let's play it, and I would love to hear your comments on it when we come back.
This is amazing. I didn't believe it when I first learned it, but 216,000 more people are born to the planet every day. Every day. It's extraordinary. But what's really extraordinary is you need, per day, 34,000 new acres of farmable land. It's not happening.
To feed a person on an all plant-based vegan diet for a year requires just 1/6 of an acre of land. To feed that same person on a vegetarian diet that includes eggs and dairy requires 3 times as much land. To feed an average U.S. citizen's high consumption diet of meat, dairy, and eggs requires 18 times as much land. This is because you can produce 37,000 pounds of vegetables on 1.5 acres, but only 375 pounds of meat on that same plot of land. I also learned the comparison doesn't end with land use. A vegan diet produces half as much CO2 as an American omnivore, uses 1/11th the amount of fossil fuels, 1/13th the amount of water, and 1/18th of the amount of land. After adding this all up, I realized I had the choice every single day to save over 1,100 gallons of water, 45 pounds of grain, 30 square feet of forested land, the equivalent of 20 pounds of CO2, and one animal's life every single day.
Demo, you once did a presentation that you shared with me called Veganism is Environmentalism. So to just build on that audio clip that I just played for our audience, why and how do you see the relationship between the two, veganism and environmentalism?
Well, I think there's no separating them. I mean, you know, the presentation that you referenced, that's something that I've been doing for about, I'd say about 7 years now,
right,
since I first developed it. And there's a growing and convincing body of evidence that clearly indicates that raising animals for human consumption is the driving force behind virtually every major category of environmental damage that's now threatening the planet. What's disheartening to me is that, you know, we just celebrated Earth Day 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And, you know, we heard all the, you know, the environmental annual awareness public service announcements, right? You know, take shorter showers, turn lights off when you leave the room, you know, recycle more, drive less, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, what's noticing we're missing from these campaigns is to adopt a plant-based diet, or better still, go vegan and stay vegan.
Right.
You know, veganism offers us a solution again. A plant-based diet and the ethical position of living vegan is something that all of us can do today, and something that can have a far-reaching implication for the entire planet. So I'm glad that more of this evidence is coming out. I'm actually researching right now for a book I'm writing, and I honestly can't keep up with the amount of research and evidence that's coming out. I mean, study after study since 2006, which was the groundbreaking study called Livestock's Long Shadow by the UN, that indicated that globally, animal agriculture is responsible for 18% of global greenhouse gas emissions.
Right.
Now, consider that. 18% is more than all of the planes, trains, buses, cars, boats, ships on the planet combined, which results in about 13% of emissions. So, you know, and then 3 years later, another report came out that blew the doors off of that report and saying that the UN underreported, and that it's actually 51% of global greenhouse gas emissions.
Right.
The USDA has settled somewhere in the middle with about 30% of global greenhouse gas. But whatever number you pick, it's larger than the entire transportation sector on the entire planet. You can't separate the two. If you're having this conversation about veganism, it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like it's like avoiding fast food in the fight against obesity.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. You know,
right.
It's like if you're talking about cancer and you don't want to address cigarette smoking.
Right.
It simply doesn't make sense. The two are inextricably, you know, related.
What I'm hearing you say, and it's in Cowspiracy, and it's in some of the other documentaries that I've seen around animal rights and plant-based diet and lifestyle, as you mentioned, is that what I'm hearing you say is that even if we were to reduce radically reduce, for example, like you said, our use of boats, our use of driving in cars, taking less showers, that would actually have a minimal impact on pollution and on the environment. Is that fair to say?
Well, they don't compare. I would say those are all good things to do. I'm not discouraging
Correct.
Anybody from taking those steps.
Correct.
What I'd like to see is the experts or the people or the organizations that we hold up as experts who are writing these PSAs and encouraging people to take steps in their everyday lives. They're better off asking people to eat plants and vegetables than they would be to ask them to drive a hybrid,
right,
or to drive less. I mean, there was the study that came out that I think it was from University of Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. And they concluded that a person who adopted a plant-based diet for a year would reduce more emissions than they would by swapping their regular car for a hybrid vehicle.
Interesting. So, you know, in your presentation that you sent me, you indicated the farmed animal emissions estimated at over half of global emissions. It said it's estimated that raising animals for food accounts for 51% of greenhouse gas emissions. That's really huge.
Yeah, that's the 2009 report that came out. It was World Bank analysts reevaluated the 2006. Study by the UN and said that globally raising animals for food was responsible for 51% of global emissions. The authors of that research say that the UN report ignored respiration.
Okay.
The fact that tens of billions of animals are being raised for food and breathing and exhaling CO2 into the atmosphere. And they also neglected to consider that at the same time, forests are being cut down to graze animals to grow food,
yes,
feed to animals, which are in turn fed to people. So it's just a ridiculously unsustainable process of of deriving our proteins by processing grains through someone else's body.
Right.
And so the authors of the 2009 World Bank report, yes, they stand very firmly behind that 51% number, even though it's been criticized as being too high. You know, the 2006 study at 18% is significant. The USDA reports in our own country's governmental reports say 30%.
Right.
So whoever's numbers you use, we're talking about significant numbers.
Right. Right, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation, because I think it is time to disrupt some of the automatics that we have around around our choices around food, our choices around our relationship to our environment, and not as a make wrong again. I'm not here to make anybody wrong, including myself for that matter. And at the same time, what our show has always been about is disrupting the automatic so that we make choices from an awakened place. That we make choices from an empowered place, that we actually have choices, that, as you said in the first segment, you know, this myth that you can only get protein from meat. Well, that's a myth. You can obviously get protein from many other places. You may not actually even need as much protein, as you were saying, as some people have indicated at times. We're going to take a break, Demo. We're going to have Anissa Romero coming in the third segment for our Ask a Dudette, because we're a bunch of dudes. So we want to bring in a dudette into the conversation. We do have a podcast. We have a podcast that drops every Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning of every week. Right now, we are ranked number 9. Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone out there, all you disruptors who are watching, listening, commenting, forwarding, and sharing it. We are listed as number 9 in the self-help category for Podomatic. You can find us on iTunes and on Podomatic. Please call in at 212-650-6903.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?
All right, you're listening to Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatics. Today we're talking about Foodruption, protecting our planet. Again, please check out the dudes on social media. Dudes of Disruption on Facebook, Dudes of Disruption on Twitter, Dudes of Disruption on Instagram. You can also get Coach Nick NYC on Twitter. Please hit us up. Join the conversation. Join the disruption. That song was Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell. As some may know, Joni Mitchell is a California native. When she wrote this song, there was a battle going on. This is one of the reasons why she wrote this song. There was a battle to save the Redwood Forest back in 1970, which were being threatened by developers who were interested in cutting down all the trees to build shopping centers and other retail establishments. As Mitchell implies in the song, this could lead to trees some days becoming something you could only see in a museum. Imagine that. She once said in an interview to the Los Angeles Times, "I wrote Big Yellow Taxi on my first trip to Hawaii. I took a taxi to the hotel, and when I woke up in the morning, I threw back the curtains and saw these beautiful green mountains in the distance. And then I looked down, and there was a parking lot as far as I could see, and it broke my heart, this blight on paradise." That's when I sat down and wrote the song. The song is about taking things for granted and then missing them when they're gone. And so one of the reasons why we wanted to have this conversation is to disrupt any automatic before our planet is gone, before our animals are gone, before we're gone. And I know that sounds really, really dramatic. And at the same time, it is time to disrupt some of the choices we make so that we can live a healthier lifestyle, so that our world can be a healthier place. We have my girlfriend joining, Anissa Romero. Anissa, are you on? Are you on, Anissa?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to the show, Anissa.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Anissa, I know you are excited about me having this conversation.
Yes. And I'm so happy to have Demo on there, who actually has all the facts spilling out of his brain, because I'm always having these conversations with Nick, and I just don't have all the details.
Are you implying that I'm not listening, that I am in an automatic around this conversation called being vegan or vegetarian?
Definitely, but you are trying to disrupt it, and I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So let me ask a question, because I asked Demo this question, and obviously, Demo, please jump in as well. What, in the first segment, we started talking about some of the myths of being vegan or vegetarian. You have a daughter, Anissa,
yep,
who is 11 years old,
mm-hmm,
and she has never eaten meat, correct?
Nope.
Never, ever, right?
In fact, she's telling me she wants to go vegan, and I was vegan for 10 years, so it is a possibility.
Okay, awesome. So
I know how to do it.
So let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. Is she okay?
Yes. What do you think, since you live with her?
I mean, she seems okay. She's a highly functioning human being. She's actually top of her class. She can get into any school that she wants to, seemingly, right? She's,
yep,
she's bright. She's talented artistically, musically, right? She's,
mm-hmm,
she's a huge personality, sweet, huge heart. Is she
completely
doing
healthy, knock on wood, except for her cat allergy?
Right, exactly. Is she doing okay? Because there's a myth out there,
yes,
that says you must eat meat to have protein. You,
yeah,
must have meat as part of the, you know, isn't that what we, the three of us group, you know, we're old enough that it was one of the food groups, that meat needs to be part of one of the
yes,
food groups that you contain.
Mm-hmm.
How,
mm-hmm,
she's doing okay though?
She's great. She actually did try meat once. She didn't swallow it, but we were at a barbecue, and they were cooking hot dogs,
right,
and they were fancy hot dogs, and she's like, I want to try it, and she was really young. She might have been six, and
right,
I realized at that moment, if I resisted, that it was, you know, forget it. So I'm like, all right, just as long as you know what you're eating.
Right.
You know, I'm like, this is a cow, and it's not the most savory parts of the cow. Just,
right,
I want you to be aware at all times of what you're doing on the planet and in your life. And she's like, okay. And she took one bite and spit it out, and we were done.
I love it. I love it. Let me ask you both this question. I'd love to hear from both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings are animals, correct?
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So what do the two of you say to folks who say, well, you know, animals kill other animals?
Well, for me, it's...
You're not even letting me finish the question, huh?
Yes. And we're omnivores, and we have a choice. And we have information and education. And for me, personally, that's kind of where I go. It's like, yeah, you can eat meat, and humans can survive eating meat, but we have a choice, and there's major issues happening in the world.
Right.
And for me, it's my responsibility as a person of this planet to do what I can.
Got
and
it.
That's something you can do every day in your life. You don't have to get on the streets and protest. You don't have to, you know, it's like a personal boycott that does so much more. And also, I believe, just even for me personally, I didn't start as a political vegetarian. I started it as a health issue because I had cancer when I was a teenager, and that's how I kind of started getting interested in health, which led me to vegetarianism. And then I didn't even care about the health aspect when I started learning about the political implications.
Mm.
So, yeah, to me, it's just about doing your part on this planet.
Demo, what do you think? That, you know, we're animals, we're just instinctually doing what an animal would do, what other animals do to other animals. That's one of the automatics that people have. And again, not making it wrong, but that's part of the conversation sometimes.
No, absolutely. No judgment zone. I just, you know, it's funny to me because I think that, you know, you know, if we're going to use animals as an example of our moral behavior, you know, we have to take that logical step. The next logical step. That animals do a lot of things that we find unethical. I mean, they steal, they rape, they eat their children, they engage in a lot of other things that shouldn't provide us with the foundation of our behavior. You know, my dog defecates in the street, but
right,
that doesn't mean I should.
Right.
You know, the argument is kind of silly and it's illogical to begin with, but it's. But why does everyone say we should follow the why doesn't anyone say that we should follow the example of a of a herbivore like a hippopotamus or a giraffe instead of a bear or a shark. You know, if we're right. looking for guidance on how to conduct ourselves, how to behave.
Got it. Fair enough. let me ask this question on the subject of, you know, animals. Let's say eating other animals. There's a myth out there that says if we don't eat animals, they will overpopulate, right? And that will cause a different set of crisis, a different kind of epidemic, a different kind of problem for us. So this is actually the right thing to be doing in order for animals not to overpopulate. You know, I mean, just to use, you know, one example here locally, you know, you go out to Long Island, for example, and there is an overpopulation of deer, right? And that does cause problems, right? So
it causes problems for humans, not for the deer.
Okay.
Causes problems for someone's rose garden. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about, you know, anything to do with the planet or saving the planet. And for me, we're just so past that point in any argument anywhere. It's like, there, you know, human population is a complete explosion. Like,
right.
That is undeniable. I'm sorry, but we somehow have to, with our intelligence, find a way for other populations of people, animal people, creatures, to live on this planet with us. It's
right.
Like, it's, for me, it's essential for human existence. We need diversity on our planet. It can't just be humans. It's just not going to work, you know? So it's, you know, if there's an overpopulation of deer, maybe we need to take some of the houses down in those cul-de-sacs and make a little bit more space for them. I don't know. Just saying.
Dima, what do you say?
Well, I think it's important to note that globally, you know, nearly every single animal that humans eat was bred into existence. So, you know, just so we're clear, they're not wandering out around someone's farm, you know, procreating as they see fit.
Right.
It's fairly straightforward what would happen to all of the animals if the world went vegan. If we stop eating them, we would stop breeding them.
Right.
And the most likely scenario for veganism, you know, worldwide is not something that in which everyone stops eating animals overnight, but one in which demand for animal products gradually, you know, declines, and fewer animals are bred into existence as a result. So, you know, and at some point along the way, as more and more people become persuaded by, you know, either the immorality of eating animals or the environmental devastation that's created with eating animals, you know, we'll hope to see that the needless killing of animals for food is recognized as a moral wrong, and the environment is worth protecting, and so that's what's going to get us in that direction. So it's another myth that if we didn't eat animals, they would overpopulate. It simply wouldn't happen that way. The world's not going to go vegan overnight. No one's claiming otherwise. It would happen slowly. But it's important to understand that animals were bred for that purpose. They're not just wandering around procreating out of control.
We
dominate their reproductive systems. We choose to bring them into existence, and it's worth noting that they're killed within a fraction of their lifetime.
Right,
they're killed as babies. You know, that's important to know as well. You know, for example, like veal gets a bad rap because it's a newborn calf. But if you look at chickens, pigs, cows, turkeys, all of these animals are slaughtered
right.
within a fraction of their lifespan.
Right.
So they're all killed as babies. So if we're upset about veal, we should be upset about all animals that are bred for human consumption.
I mean, I think it's important too. There's so many levels to vegetarianism, animal rights. It's, you know, the environmental level, the personal health of the human who's consuming or not consuming it, and even just the ethical, especially in our country and in our westernized culture. For me, that's almost one of the topper is just the way we treat these other creatures of our planet.
Right.
It's so insane to me that not only is it just not okay on any level for the animals, for the planet, but the humans are consuming that torture. Like, it's literally torture. You just, you know, you can watch that 5-minute Paul McCartney video, Glass Walls, I think it's called. The information is so easily accessible to see what kind of food that you're consuming.
Right.
I really don't think people want to consume that sort of fear and torture. It's pretty much as bad as you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
And to me, that is so unhuman on every level and just so unacceptable. It's not a bucolic farm with happy cows roaming the grasslands. It's
right.
Just not that. I wish it was. You know, I have no problem with that. If people want to raise animals respectfully and, you know, let them have a life and kill them at some point, I don't want to do that, but I really don't have a moral problem with that. I have a major moral problem with the industry of animal farming. It's just
right.
Beyond my scope of being able to handle.
Let me ask this question. It was some information that Demo had shared with me offline. He shared with me, global meat production is projected to more than double from 229 million tons in 1991-2001 timeframe to 465 million tons in 2050, while milk output is set to climb from 580 to 1,043 million tons during that same timeframe. The question I ask, I guess you could say it's a bit of a softball or a beach ball, would be how will this increase in consumption in meat, in consumption in dairy, impact our environment? As a sidebar, in 2010, there's a university in Canada, I may say their name wrong, Dalhousie. Dalhousie, thank you, warned that this projected increase of meat and dairy consumption by 2050 would imperil the planet due to increased emissions related to raising animals for food. So let me ask you guys before we take a break into our last segment, how will this increase in consumption in meat and dairy impact our environment?
Well, do you want me to go first?
Go for it.
I mean, the reality is that, you know, the livestock sector is a major environmental polluter. You know, much of the world's pasture land has been degraded by grazing or feed production. Forests have been clear cut to make way for additional farmland. Feed production also requires an incredibly intensive use of water, of fertilizer, of pesticides, fossil fuels.
Right.
Animal waste is another serious concern because, you know, only a third of the nutrients that the animals are fed are absorbed. So animal waste is a leading factor in the pollution of land and water resources. The beef, the pork, and the poultry industries also emit large amounts of carbon dioxide, methane, and other greenhouse gases. So without a change in demand,
right,
the projected doubling, the increase by 2050, is also going to double the current environmental burden, and going to continue even larger environmental degradation.
Right.
We can't keep going on this path. You know, we need to start change. We need to start addressing the demand for these products.
Yeah, and I just think I think this is kind of one of the points of Cowspiracy. It's just so interesting that the major environmental protection organizations of the world won't touch the subject with a 10-foot pole, and I think that just
yeah, Demo mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, how powerful the meat and dairy industry is in this country. It's like, you know, far surpasses the influence someone like the NRA even has. It's running the show, basically.
Right.
And yeah, I'm not sure how we get this into the more. Definitely it's more now than it was in the 80s when I became a vegetarian. But, you know, it's a little too slow going for probably the most important political environment issue of our time.
Anissa, will you stay on to do parting shots? Can you stay
sure.
on? Or
mm-hmm.
Is that cool? Okay, we're going to go into our fourth segment for parting shots. Again, Coach Nick, due to disruption, have a men's group in New York City. We are transforming how men show up. We've got a couple of sessions here in May, email me at coachnick@coachnick.com. Anissa and I and a few other friends have a political social action group. We're meeting on May 23rd in New York City. If you want to get on the court around politics, email me again at coachnick@coachnick.com. Up next, more of your calls, online comments, and parting shots.
The world is just a great big onion. And hate and fear are the spices that make you cry. Oh, baby. And the only way to get free of this great big onion is to plant.
All right, you're listening to Coach Nick and the Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatics, your automatic way of being, thinking, doing, especially doing around the choices we're making around food, the choices we're making around our environment. Today's title show is Foodruption, Protecting Our Planet. You can call in at 212-650-6903. That song was The Onion by Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. We have an online comment, Demo, from one of our old friends, Nick from Queens. Nick Capus, great show, dudes. Demo, you did a great job. He's not done yet, Nick. We've got a few more minutes. But that was The Onion. It's definitely a song around social consciousness on topics like we are discussing today. I love a few of the lines that I want to read out to our audience. Hey, world, we got a great big job to do. Yeah, we need you and everybody who loves truth. Don't you know we've got to clean up this place and reach for a higher goal? Yeah, yes, we do. Now, we got to be headstrong about right and the wrong and make a lot more happy songs. The world is just a great big onion, and I don't care. Is the face people like to wear? Yes, it is now, oh baby, and the only way to get rid of this great big onion, every single soul's got to do their share and tell about it. So hopefully people will go share this podcast and tell people to start making different choices, or at least consider the choices they're making around food and around how we treat and relate and interact to our environment. So we're up parting shots. Anissa, because chivalry is still alive here in the Dudes of Disruption land, we will have you go first. Just parting shots for today's conversation.
I just think that this is such an amazing issue and opportunity for anyone to make a huge difference in the world, in our environment, in politics, in social justice. It's such, to me, vegetarianism, veganism is basically the foundation of everything. It's how you walk through this planet, how you conduct your life. And it's such a simple thing to do that affects so much that even if just taking it on, like committing to it once a week, reducing the amount, like start there and just educating yourself around it. It's just like what I told my daughter when she was six. That's fine. Take a bite of it, but know what it is. Like, know what you're doing. Don't just like stumble through life and accept it that this is okay without knowing the consequence of eating at a fast food restaurant. What that impacts all over the planet. So to me, it's just like such a foundation of being an aware human being on our planet. And it's always been an important issue to me since I was 16 years old. So
awesome.
And thank you so much for doing this show. It means
absolutely
a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for being on the show. Demo, parting shot.
Well, thanks again for having me. I'm going to take a little bit of a different tack than Anissa did. I want to encourage people to go vegan and stay vegan. I think reducing your meat content, your meat intake, and while noble, we have to consider the fact that we simply don't have enough time to wait. The science doesn't bear it out. I've presented on this issue for a number of times over the last few years, and I have to tell you, I'm always a little hesitant. If you haven't picked up on it already, I'm not an environmental vegan. When I became vegan, I did so for ethical reasons. To repeat something I said earlier, like most people, I believe that animals shouldn't be harmed unnecessarily.
Right.
But my actions, however, contradicted that belief, and I continued to use and eat them in different ways. And you know, becoming vegan was the only way for me to resolve that contradiction. And, you know, I wasn't raised vegan. You know, like you, Nick, I grew up in a Greek family. And,
right.
And, you know, when I announced that I was giving up the animals, that was like announcing, like, I was giving up breathing.
You must be a Martian.
I didn't give up animals because I didn't like the taste, of meat, dairy, eggs, and cheese. On the contrary, I loved the taste. You know, I became vegan because one day I took responsibility for my choices. I no longer believed that animals were here for us for clothing, for food, for entertainment, for research, or
right.
for any other purpose. And it was just really a simple matter of aligning my actions with our ethics. Because when you genuinely care about fighting injustice or oppression or exploitation, the internal debate for you is about how to make the fight work, because participating in injustice is unacceptable.
Right.
Honestly, I would be vegan even if it were bad for the environment. I know that's a strange thing to say since I, you know, teach environmental ethics, but, you know, it's good to know that I can be a good environmentalist and a good vegan simultaneously.
Awesome.
But, you know, it's important to know that, you know, since the term was first coined in the 40s by Donald Watson and Dorothy Morgan, veganism has been about giving animals equal consideration.
Yes.
And not just the animals we eat, but the ones that we wear, the ones that we experiment on, the ones that we use in different ways. You know, veganism is not about diet. It shouldn't be conflated with raw food or anti-GMO or oil-free or gluten-free or, you know, sugar-free or any other unnecessary dietary restriction. You know, it has nothing to do with health or really the environment for that matter. You know, being vegan is your everyday statement that things are not right in the world,
right.
that you're one more person standing up to be counted in opposition to the exploitation of animals. It's the refusal every day of a system that produces enormous profits at the expense of animals who are just as sentient as the family cat or dog that we share our lives with.
Yeah, and at the expense of our environment. Demo,
right.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much for being on the show. My parting shot is, because we've got to wrap up, is I started the show with a Gandhi quote. I'm going to end with a Gandhi quote and sentiment, which is, he said, ethically, they had arrived at the conclusion that man's supremacy over lower animals meant not that the former should prey upon the latter, but that the higher should protect the lower, and that there should be mutual aid between the two, as between man and man. And as a human being, my commitment is to make different choices around food, make different choices around the environment. You've been listening to Coach Nick, Demo Maratos, Anissa Romero, Due to Disruption Show, WHCR, WHCR.org, 90.3 FM. We are back next Sunday from 2 to 3. The podcast drops tomorrow on iTunes and Podomatic. And we end every show with a Hall of Fame disruptor, Dr. Seuss. Don't cry because it's over. Smile. Big, big smile because it happened.
I'm gonna be round my vegetables.